Committee on Rules to order. We have no committee measures to introduce today, so we will start off by opening a public hearing on Senate Concurrent Resolution 1.
Madam Chair and members, Senate Concurrent Resolution 1 designates the Kyger Mustang as the official state horse. There are no amendments associated with this measure, and the fiscal and revenue paperwork indicates there is also no impact associated with this measure.
Okay, we have two esteemed legislators here in the audience, and maybe more, but at least two. So why don't you come on up?
Ma'am, do you have this?
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Hansel, State Senator from District 29. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you regarding SCR 1, a bill to designate the Kyger Mustang as the official state horse for Oregon. Although this bill began with Senator Devlin, when he asked me, I quickly signed on to SCR 1. I have longtime friends, Nancy and Dean Parker, who live in my hometown of Athena, and who raise Kyger Mustangs. They purchased their original herd stock from a BLM sale and have developed a Mustang herd on their farm. They are a beautiful breed and are among the surest footed pack animals available. Kyger Mustangs are the only horse breed to have developed in Oregon. They are part of the history of our state in such a way that the Bureau of Land Management has designated specific areas for Mustang herds to live. They're also considered among the last surviving descendants of America's first horses. The Kyger is a part of Oregon's history. It has been around longer than any other breed of horse in Oregon, and it embodies the free spirit, resilience, and steadfastness we commonly associate with our state. Because of these attributes, I believe the Kyger Mustang deserves its place as a symbol for the state of Oregon. I believe it is the only breed native to Oregon and was named after Kyger Canyon in the Steens Mountains, one of the places it lived in the wild. Thank you for this opportunity, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Richard Devlin, Senate District 19. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to speak today about SCR 1, which would designate the Kyger Mustang as the official state horse of Oregon. Senator Hansel has done a very good job of presenting it. I'll try not to be too redundant, but this is prepared testimony, so there may be a little bit that is redundant. This bill would recognize the special historical significance that the Kyger Mustang has in our great state and makes Oregon only the 13th state in the nation to recognize a state horse. The wild Kyger Mustang was first detected in the 1970s in the Steens Mountain areas of southeastern Oregon. Although most wild horses exhibit mixed traits from crossbreeding, the Kyger Mustang has exceptionally retained distinct characteristics of the Spanish Mustang. According to the Bureau of Land Management, the Kyger Mustang, quote, may be one of the best remaining examples of the Spanish Mustang, end quote, and for this reason, quote, their preservation is important. Some of these special characteristics include the Kyger Mustang's primitive dun coloration and unique markings, including dorsal stripes, two-toned manes and tails, leg stripes, and outlined ears. Highly sought by enthusiasts around the world, the Kyger Mustang is found in the wild only in two herds located in the Kyger and Middle Mountain herd management areas, a herd size total ranging from 80 to nearly 140 that is managed by the Bureau of Land Management in the Burns District. Chair Burdick, members of the committee, here today are a number of people who can more clearly explain the uniqueness of the Kyger Mustang and special significance that it holds for our state. I appreciate this opportunity and time before you. I urge your recommendation to the full Senate do pass.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Okay, we have several people signed up. Normandy Helmer, John Helmer, and Stacy Harnew.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, thank you for hearing my testimony. I appreciate the opportunity to participate in government. My name is Normandy Helmer. I am a resident of unincorporated Lane County, CD Loop, District 6. And I'm a member of the Kiger Mustang Association, and I have a Kiger Mustang in my backyard. I speak today in support of SCR 1, declaring the Kiger Mustang as the state horse. I note that staff have declared no revenue impact, but I believe this designation actively benefits Oregon. First, it brings attention to Eastern Oregon, heightening awareness of its stunning landscapes, its history, its heritage, and its desirability as a travel destination. Second, it brings much-needed awareness to wild horses. While the Kigers are a success story with strong market value and a powerful international image, just down the road, less famous horses go unadopted, crowding ranges and corrals, stressing forage and water sources. Westerners understand the importance of water and the need to manage scarce resources, the need to make hard decisions. Americans need to face the realities of wild horse management, and I believe the Kiger can help. Fossil records show the horse was born here in North America and migrated to other continents. The Spanish brought the horse back, and those horses broke free and repopulated, rewilded the Americas. The Kigers, as mentioned, have a strong genetic connection to the original Spanish horses, one of the things that makes them special. If you grew up with Saturday cowboy movies, as I did, the image of the cowboy and the Indian epitomized the West. Today in Harney County, you still see cowboys moving cattle from horseback. The people of the horse, the Cayuse people, are part of the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla, named near Pendleton, and we live still in the land of the horse. The horse speaks to a deep place in the American spirit. Look at the success of the Ford Mustang and consider that name was not chosen at random. Look at the horse-drawn carriages in Manhattan. People crave contact with horses. Wild horses speak to the American dreams of freedom, of space, of opportunity. I ride my horse in a local park, and when I pass hikers, they say, he's pretty. And I say, thank you, he's actually a Mustang, born wild in Eastern Oregon. And their faces transform as if they're suddenly seeing something completely magical standing in front of them, and they say, can I touch him? And my horse and I, of course, say, yes, he loves to be admired. And as they're admiring him, I tell them all about Eastern Oregon and how incredible a place it is and how they should all go there. And I tell them about the wild horses that still exist and how special they are and how cool it is to go see horses running wild. This summer, my horse will reside for a month at the Riddle Brothers Historic District on Steens Mountain, giving people a chance to meet a wild BLM Mustang face-to-face as they tour that wonderful heritage ranch. Probably 300 people will encounter my horse this summer in the course of 1 month. For many people, Oregon means rain and trees, but also college football and really good beer. It means recycling, coastal access, medical marijuana, death with dignity, vote by mail. Oregon means both innovation and wilderness. Oregon is really different. There are wild horses all over the world, and the American Mustang is considered the finest wild horse in the entire world, and the Kiger Mustang is the most sought after of them all. There is a reason that people buy Kigers and ship them to Switzerland, to New Zealand. The Kiger is really different. They're really special. Like Oregon, they are a treasure to protect and to celebrate. I support passage of SCR 1. I believe the Kiger Mustang actively benefits Oregon. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. We'll take the rest of the panel, and then we'll open for questions. Welcome.
Thank you, Senators. I appreciate the opportunity to speak in favor of designating the Kiger Mustang as a state horse. Others will speak to...
Your name for the...
I'm sorry. My name is John Helmer, and I live in Lane County. Others will speak to some of the other reasons, excuse me, but I wanted to mention one that's sort of near and dear to my heart, and that is that I think this is really a great opportunity to make a symbolic gesture to honor the people and the landscape of Eastern Oregon. I've spent quite a bit of time in Harney County, currently serving on the Steens Mountain Advisory Council. And I think we all know that the people of Harney County, the people of that part of our state, have gone through a really tough time in the last year or so. And I think, like most citizens of Oregon, I feel that the people really comported themselves with just tremendously. I mean, they really did us proud. When you look at the work of the ranchers, the Burns Paiute, the BLM, all the folks involved out there, I think they really did us proud. And so I think this is a nice opportunity to make a symbolic gesture that honors the people, the landscape, the history, the traditions of Eastern Oregon. So for that reason, among others, I'm in favor. But I hope also that the Oregon legislature will move on to look at other ways to more tangibly benefit Harney County and the people of Eastern Oregon, because, again, I think they've really, really done us proud, and they deserve our support.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
My name is Stacy Harnu Swanson. I'm from Clackamas County, Sherwood, Oregon. Thank you, Madam Chair. My reason for being here right now stems a little bit from the fact that I'm an educator and I'm also a museum professional and have been drawn to these horses. Currently, we run a therapeutic riding center at our barn, and what I've found when we open up our barn to the public is that they've been tremendously interested in the Kigers that we have on site. They've heard about the Kigers. They want to know more about the history of the Kiger and the state of Oregon. And I think one of the nicest...
Can you step back from the mic?
Oh, okay. One of the best reasons to designate this horse as the Oregon state horse has to do with the fact that it's owned by all the citizens in this state. All the other state horses reside in private barns and private ranches, but this is the only state horse that resides on public lands. It's available for people to visit. It's available for people to take photographs of. It's available for people to experience. I also see that there's a great international and national interest in these horses. From the point of view of scientists, tourism, artists, and motion pictures. Even the toy industry, actually. These little guys were produced from 1991 to 1996 by the Breyer Company. And you may not have collected Breyer horses, but a number of young girls do, and young boys as well. And these horses were celebrated for a period of about 5 years by the Breyer Company. They also were celebrated in a major motion picture film by DreamWorks. The lead character there was a Kiger horse, animated, and Matt Damon was the voice of that Kiger horse. So that brought a lot of attention to the Kiger as well and to Oregon. Artists are particularly taken by these horses, and again, they can see these horses out in the wild. So we have a lot of photography. In your packet there's a couple of photos that have toured with a gallery in New York. These horses are seen as an emblem of the Wild West and the spirit that we all love. They have a specific genetic importance that may be sort of a dry subject, but it's very important to some people. There's a gentleman in Spain right now who is researching the connections between the Kiger and the horses from his area in Spain, and that's where the conquistadors or the explorers drew their horses to come here to the States. He needs DNA research on that, and we've got that because these are BLM horses. Also, there's a gentleman in Germany who is a huge proponent of the Kiger horse and has written an outstanding book called... he's given to fancy names. Born Survivors on the Eve of Extinction. His name is Hardy Oki. There's also, of course, the historical significance. These horses, we say, and rightly so, are direct descendants of the Spanish horses that came through the conquistadors, but they were treasured and they were cultivated by the ranchers in the Great Basin. The cowboys in the Great Basin, again, reaching right back to our history. We have one gentleman right now who is a rancher there in eastern Oregon who is augmenting his income. He had, there's a couple families doing this by taking people out to go, and photographers, painters, out to go see these horses. So there's a lot of opportunity for tourism and for celebration of these horses, and I appreciate the fact that you're considering this. Bill.
Thank you. Okay, questions from the committee. Thank you very much. Okay, Carol Foley and Barbara Kane. No, wait, let me do this a different way. Barbara Kane and Jeff Kane look like they belong together here.
If I might, unless...
we need to move along.
Okay, they might not want to speak, is what I was going to say.
Okay. All right. If they don't want to speak, they don't want to speak. Carol Foley and Dean Daniel are signed up. Nobody's required to speak.
My testimony is in your packet.
Okay. We will take...
And Carol Foley.
You're Carol Foley. We will put make sure we take note of Carol Foley's testimony that's in OLIS.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that completes our witness list. Is there anybody else who wanted to testify on this? All right. Thank you very much. We will close the hearing on Senate Concurrent Resolution 1. And we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 683. Council.
Madam Chair and members, Senate Bill 683, beginning January 1st, 2019, eliminates the requirement that an elector pay the cost for ballot return postage and requires that the state pay for ballot return envelopes that can be returned by business reply mail. The revenue statement indicates that there is no impact as a result of this legislation, and the fiscal impact is indeterminate at this time. There is one amendment being offered today. The Dash 1 amendment exempts armed forces members, veterans, and persons with disabilities rather than all electors from the ballot postage requirement. And we have not received the fiscal or revenue paperwork on the Dash 1 amendments yet.
Okay, we'll start out with Scott Bassett, Eric Zimmerman, and Nikki Fisher. Oh, Senator Devlin is here. Everybody hold up. And Senator Devlin, did you want to, okay, you're back for a return performance here.
Yes,
Madam Chair, if Senator Embro would like to start, that would be fine. No, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Michael Dembro. I represent Senate District 23. That's Northeast, Southeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose. And I'm happy to be here to talk to you about Senate Bill 683. That's the one we're talking about, yes?
Correct.
Okay, great. So, you know, of course, we're all really proud of the way that Oregon has been committed to increasing its voter participation. And, you know, one of the key steps that we took was our mail-in ballot that has been in effect now for a number of years and that is, you know, I think the pride of the country in many respects. And it's... you know, it's a system that largely works quite well, but there are still some people who we know that there are ballots out there that are not getting in, and we would like to remove the impediment that is there for some people to mail in their ballot, and that has to do with the postage stamp. Now, you may think that the lack of a postage stamp is not that great of an impediment, but for a number of people, it's the one thing, you know, at the end of the day And we're talking about literally the end of the day, the end of election, or just, you know, right before election day, when they are at the, you know, the do or die point for getting their ballot in, that people, that holds them up from mailing in their ballot. They don't have a stamp. This is especially true for a lot of young people who don't use stamps, frankly. They don't, you know, they pay their bills electronically. They, you know, they're just not into the stamp culture. It's also true, frankly, for a lot of people who are low income and maybe people who have disabilities, who have difficulties alternatively getting out and dropping off those ballots. And just, you know, speaking directly to my own experience, you know, I'm very active going out, door knocking, trying to get out the vote as we are approaching election day. And as we're approaching election day, I will be one of those who will offer to take people's, pick up people's ballots and deliver them to make sure that they get in if they so want. And I can't tell you how many people are at that point where they have their ballot, it's all filled out, they tell me, well, I need to go to the post office to get a stamp to mail it in, or I would mail it in, but I don't have a stamp, or I don't have a stamp, so I'll go and I'll drop it off in person. And they've been meaning to do that for the last few days, and they have not done it. And it becomes very clear to me that, you know, actually they're probably not going to do it. That one impediment is keeping them from getting their ballot in. So what, and this is also true for veterans, right? We have a very high percentage of unreturned ballots from veterans in this state. And so for all these reasons, it seems to make sense for us to have the possibility of having these ballots be postage paid. I suspect that many people will still put a stamp on, but they don't need to put a stamp on. If they don't have a stamp, they can still mail it in. It'll get delivered, and it will, and their vote will be registered. Their vote will count, and I think it will improve our participation rate. So, for all of those reasons, for the last couple of sessions, Senator Devlin and I have been interested in moving this legislation. And you know, what this bill does is it calls out that this would go into effect January 1st, 2019. So it would give the system a lot of time to prepare for this new this new element, and obviously wouldn't have an immediate impact on our general fund this session. And for all of these reasons, we have carefully thought this through, and this is the bill that we're presenting before you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Devlin.
For the record, Senator Richard Devlin, Senate District 19. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to speak today about SB 683, which would reduce barriers to the ballot and maintain Oregon's place as a leader in voter access. As it's stated, it is something to be proud of that we've been at the forefront of elections access issues for so many years, with vote by mail, online registration, motor voter, and now hopefully with SB 683. The bill would allow for paid postage on all ballots for all elections beginning after January 1st, 2019. This would be done through the business reply envelope, so only those ballots returned via mail would be charged to the state. Chair Burdick, members of the committee, I would like to share some exciting news with you. It may not be exciting to everyone here, but it's exciting to me. King County, Washington, has experimented with this in two districts for the February 2017 special election. Their current expectations for turnout were about 30%, the same as the last special election. King County was surprised to find turnout had increased to just shy of 40% after they provide prepaid postage for their ballots. Chair Burdick and members of the committee, I know that some members question the necessity of eliminating postage from return ballots. Some have gone, as we present this around the building, some has gone so far as to question if someone should be voting if they do not make the effort to procure a stamp. Some question the expenditures required by this legislation that may cost as much as perhaps $300,000 this biennium and as much as $1.3 million next biennium. But both of these questions miss the point of this legislation. The purpose of this legislation is to increase participation in our representative democracy. If this legislation were to lead to a 5 or even 10% increase in voter turnout, then I believe this expenditures of public dollars will be very well spent. Oregon's role as a leader in encouraging participation in our electoral process should be important to all of us. Participation is the foundation of our democracy. While you and I may have no problem obtaining postage, I think we should remember that that is not the case for all Oregonians. For those who have limited mobility or who live in assisted living facilities or nursing homes, for example, obtaining postage isn't always as easy as it sounds. While the bill highlights certain populations that would benefit from this legislation, limiting the scope of this bill to only those populations would substantially curtail the broader effort of expanding access and improving ballot returns. Chair Burdick, members of the committee, utilizing business reply envelopes is a cost-effective method to expand participation and make our voting system more accessible and equitable. Thank you for this opportunity to testify today. I urge your support of SB 683 and ask that you move it forward with a do-pass recommendation to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means for further consideration.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Senator Farrioli.
For the good co-chair of Ways and Means, didn't we have a fiscal analysis on this the last time this bill appeared in a slightly different iteration?
Yes, we did, and I think you'll get one. If you don't have it, you should get one shortly. I believe that fiscal analysis will be in probably the $300,000 to $400,000 range this biennium. That's because it doesn't take effect till January of 2019, and it should be about $1.3 to $1.4 million in the following biennium because it would apply to all elections. One thing I would say about that fiscal analysis: similar bills have been introduced for probably 4 or 5 sessions now. My office did the additional analysis that determined basically that by using the business reply envelope, you could bring the fiscal impact of this down considerably. Because if you do it the alternative way and just simply put postage on all of the ballots, you're going to pay for all the ballots. This way you will only pay for those that are actually returned via the mails.
Question, Madam Chair. The inability of folks to obtain postage is the barrier. Is that correct?
I think that is, in a sense, a barrier for some people. But I think it's actually also something where I think, in my mind, of all the things that we do in terms of bettering participation in government, voting is one that we should take away as many barriers as possible. And by taking away the postage requirement, I think we're just taking away a single barrier. And the most important thing to me is how many people participate or how many people that feel that they're involved, regardless of their political persuasion or geographic area.
Madam Chair, if I may?
Please.
Question about whether or not postage is available, I think, has been answered. There's an app for that. So any individual can register with the post office, email address, name, for a nominal fee. You can print your own postage on your own device or app through the app and affix it to your envelope and literally have access to postage anywhere you have a printer or have access to a printer.
I think that is
internet lounges or I think, at your own home.
So. I think, Madam Chair, Senator Farrioli, you've kind of answered your own question. There are a lot of people who are never going to enter that world, frankly, of, you know, they're just not computer savvy. They're not internet savvy. You know, certainly some of the young people, that's not going to be the case. But many people just would not know where to start as far as that goes. And I think, you know, again, what we see happen a lot is people have the best of intentions. You know, they think, okay, I'll get, you know, I'll drop the ballot off because you know, the stamp, I just, it's too much of an obstacle to me. So I'll drop the ballot off. And they have the best of intentions, but, you know, work, family, whatever, the, you know, that final day comes, and it's too late, and they don't do it. Where if they had just put it in the mail, it would have gotten in.
Madam Chair.
Senator Devlin.
If I might comment additionally, I want to take a little bit of caution making this comment because some of my younger staff don't like this commentary, but I'll make it anyway. The two of us and the people at the dais, with the exception of the committee administrator, I believe are all baby boomers. They're of the baby boomer generation. I don't think the Senate president very clearly says he's not a baby boomer. He's a member of the silent generation. He may not fit that description.
He didn't get the memo, I think.
But I think we all know the reality today is that most of us, many of us, still have landlines. Very few young people have landlines anymore. Most of us still occasionally send a bill in by mail. I actually don't anymore because I do it all on online banking. I go out to my mailbox each day, not to necessarily look for bills because all of those are online and they're sent to me, but actually just to see what junk mail I've received today. Because usually there's 14 or 15 different pieces, and usually if there's one actual piece that's actually not junk mail, it's actually probably a good day. The reality is I maintain very few postage stamps at home because I have very little use for them. Even my spouse no longer sends Christmas cards. She sends cards through email. The reality is that everything is moving away from the postage stamp, and I know that that is a problem for the U.S. Postal Service because their primary people they're serving now are actually people who are moving packages, people who are moving solicitations, and to some extent, the few companies that still send bills directly and don't have ways to do it via the Internet. I think the reality is that while many of us feel very comfortable just going down and purchasing stamps, I never really personally want to be without them, so I always go down and purchase a few extra. And most of us, given what we've done in our life, have paid a lot for postage to the U.S. Postage Service at some time in our life. That's a comment about our political side. Most of us have paid far more for postage than any average member of the public. But I think the reality is putting something in the mail is becoming a rarer and rarer occurrence with postage.
Madam Chair.
Can you make it very short?
Very brief.
Very brief.
Almost every ATM has a sheet stamp feature. Certainly the post office sells forever stamps and singles, sheets, or rolls. They can be purchased online with an app. They are available at grocery stores, variety stores, and a wide variety of outlets. And I just have trouble believing that if somebody is a registered voter during the three-week period between the ballot drop and the time that they're required to return their ballot, they wouldn't have an occasion to encounter any reasonable access point for postage. That having been said, it seems absolutely unreasonable that we would incur millions of dollars of expenses for postage, essentially to acknowledge that we've become so dysfunctional in society and our ballot casting is of so little value that we couldn't cover the cost of a stamp. It's just a real sad commentary, Madam Chair.
Chair, I'll respectfully and very respectfully just disagree.
Thank you. And we'll leave time for the other witnesses.
Thank
other
you.
Questions? Thank you very much. Okay, Nikki Fisher, Eric Zimmerman, and Scott Bassett.
Good Thank you, Chair and committee members. Since you called my name first, I'm Scott Bassett. I'm from Salem, and I'm here to support Senate Bill 283 that I would say it removes a poll tax from Oregon elections, and it removes a barrier to voting. Yesterday, I was campaigning door-to-door just over here by Market Street and I-5 for a candidate for a special election to fill a vacancy on the Salem City Council. So this is an issue that's immediately important to me, in that the deadline for the March 14th election is Thursday. And or whenever the 8th is. I guess it's 2 days from now. Today is the 6th. You have to mail your ballot in by the 8th. Only 600 people out of 8,000 people in Ward 6 have voted as of last Friday. And when you're at their door and you're talking to them, they express some concerns about having to find a stamp. And I frankly do not think that campaigns should be offering voters to deliver their ballots. It just feels like you're kind of crossing the line when you're at somebody's door and you say, well, since you can't easily get a stamp and you can't easily deliver this to a Dropbox, I will be glad to mail it for you. And it would just be nice if that doesn't have to happen. You know, the Supreme Court nationally in 1966 made a decision that a poll tax is illegal. And when you're talking to somebody in a mobile home park and they say, you know, 50 cents, 49 cents to mail is equivalent to 10 deposit return cans, you start to view the value of a stamp a little bit differently. But I have just a couple of other points that I'd like to make quickly. It's been touched on that a growing number of voters do not use postage stamps. For some, it is really a significant barrier to voting. The other thing that I want to mention is that if you want to mail something, even a single envelope, and you don't have postage stamps, and your cell phone doesn't come with a printer. So many of these young people don't deal with paper much. You don't have an easy way to get that one stamp done, other than going down to the post office and getting in line. People don't want to buy stamps, or some people don't want to buy stamps at a grocery store because they either don't want to have more than a few, or they can't afford to buy a whole pack of stamps, a package of stamps at once. For many people, if something can't be done on a cell phone, it just simply isn't going to be done. You can't easily buy stamps with a cell phone, even though I'm glad to hear that there are applications, because you can't easily print it unless you have access to a printer. And so those people who are trying to get their ballots in the mailbox 2 days from now on March the 8th have limited options. And for special elections, the return rates are so very low. Given that the vacant city council seat is the only thing on the ballot, lots of voters will decide not to vote because it's a hassle to track down a stamp or a drop box if they have other ballot measures or they have other candidates, then they might have extra motivation. And so my last point here, and thank you for your attention. Before vote by mail, there was no poll tax on casting a ballot, and voting booths were in each neighborhood. It was absolutely free. Now it costs money and time to track down a stamp, which is, in effect, stated extremely, I'll acknowledge, is a poll tax. Thank you for considering voting for this bill, and I hope the committee will give it legs, because it will be a growing issue in the future. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Who's next?
Thank you, Chair, and other members. Appreciate it. My name is Eric Zimmerman from Multnomah County. Initially, my work has been on veterans issues, and really to get into the issues that our systems were not meeting the needs of this generation's returning veterans. I'm here to speak to ask you to support this bill. And the reason I'm doing that is that I think that anything that we can do to enable voting is a good thing that we should be doing. I want to just offer a few brief comments about my own experience. Many of us understand that for a person serving in a combat zone, we understand that ballots can be received back to the state free of charge, or the postage is being covered for that individual. But that's not the case necessarily for other Oregonians who are serving in other countries or in other states. Many Oregonians do maintain their Oregon citizenship while they serve a career in our armed forces. And I think that's something that we should celebrate. We should celebrate that fact that they, when they retire, they end their assignments, that they come back to Oregon. I can tell you that even as an eager and very involved voter, the balancing of duties and likely, you know, not spending too much time in one place, even updating your residence and your mailing address is a feat in and of itself. When it is, and we're lucky enough to, that we actually do get ballots, what I really ask is, how many millennials do you know that have stamps? We've said it time and time again with the other senators' comments and the other guests, but I guess the real question when I look at this bill isn't why should we cover postage, it's why wouldn't we cover the postage? That's really what it comes down to for me. In 2008, I was living in a hotel room in Arizona, having been stationed in Arizona, having just reported from being stationed in Georgia. In 2010, I was transitioning back to the United States after having served in Iraq during our primary election. And I'll tell you, I don't know too many 22 and 23, and for that case, 45-year-olds who have stamps in those types of situations. And I think that that's something important for us to recognize. It may seem minuscule, and I understand that, but in the competing requirements that a person has for their time and attention in this type of career field, if we get someone their ballot, that's a first win. If we get them to open it, that's a second win, and I see no other reason why we wouldn't remove this barrier as well. And I said when I opened that I started working on veterans issues because I thought our system wasn't addressing this generation's concerns, and I think that is very relative to this conversation as well, though my haircut would not support that I'm a member of this millennial generation. I assure you that I am. And what I can say is the bottom line is that our generation just does everything online. I'm very glad that my own senator who is here says he pays all his bills online, because I do too. We watch TV online. We pay all of our bills online. The first time I voted as an Oregonian, and I've only ever voted by mail, I was so eager to turn that ballot in that I turned it in the day that I got it, and I'm glad I did, because I didn't even understand that I needed to attach postage to it as a high school student. It looked like a business reply, it felt like a business reply, and I put it in the mail because I assumed that it was. I was lucky that there was so much time it got back, I was able to put that on and do the right process. But I offer that just an example because I'm sure I'm not the only person who's learned that lesson that way. And though as generations are changing, we may not always understand how a system is not supporting the next generation, but this is an area now where we're testifying and we're seeing that the voters today are doing something differently. And I'll tell you, the majority of members in the United States military today are millennials as well. And so I'd ask you to consider supporting this bill without amendment and make every barrier possible something that we should be proud of as Oregonians that we've taken away for voting. Thank you.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
Nikki.
Hey. Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Farioli, members of the committee, my name is Nikki Fisher, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Bus Project. The Oregon Bus Project is Oregon's leading youth-led organization. Our mission is making politics accessible and fun for young people through mobilization, empowerment, and building progressive communities while making Oregon a better place for everyone. We're an organization focused on engaging young people in the democratic process. The bus drives votes, it drives leaders, and it drives change. I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 683. I know that Senator Devlin and Senator Dembro have already gone through details of the policy, so I want to take my time on giving you some background and research behind this bill. Since last session when we brought this bill forward, we've spent time talking with Oregonians who are personally affected by this issue. We spoke with Charles, who was a disabled veteran and first-time voter under Oregon Motor Voter, who didn't have a stamp at home or the ability to drop off his ballot. We spoke with Bobby and Jenna, whose stories will be submitted into record. They were first-time parents who mistakenly mailed their ballot with no stamp a few weeks after Jenna gave birth to their first child. They live in Linn County, where ballots are returned for insufficient funds. At this time, they sent in their ballots, remembering a stamp was, or they, when they sent in their ballots, remembering a stamp was lost in the chaos of diapers and nap time and all other things that new parents worry about. We met with disability rights advocates who told us that voters with visual disabilities who have to request a special ballot often have to provide additional postage because their ballots weigh more than single stamp allows. We polled new registrants who registered under Oregon Motor Voter and found that 42% of them didn't have a postage stamp at home. While they understood that it was their civic duty, many first-time voters didn't have access or understand the process. What's more is we know that this is an issue that particularly affects Oregonians serving in the military, serving in non-combat zones. Approximately 1,000 Oregonians who are active members of the military receive their ballot at an overseas address. That's one out of every six identified Oregon voters who serve in the military. And a recent study by the Pew Charitable Trust, which is available on OLIS, ranked Oregon fifth worst in the nation for military voters because 74% of our ballots went unreturned in 2014. You can also find a report on OLIS mentioned by Senator Devlin from King County, Washington. In two different special elections where paid postage was for paid for all mail-in ballots, there was a 10% increase in returned ballots. We understand the budgetary deficits that our state faces this session, and we understand that there will be costs associated with paying for postage on Oregon ballots. However, we believe that every Oregonian, regardless of where they live, how old they are, or whether they require a special ballot, should have an opportunity to weigh in on the critical importance to them and their community, free from barriers. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Questions?
Yes, Madam Chair. First, for Mr. Bassett. I hope you have the courage to take the poll tax argument to Senator Winter's office and share that with her. Her father paid a poll tax, and to have somebody equate the cost of a stamp with the 2 days her father worked in the street sweeping the street with a poll tax, I think you might find an outpouring of pretty passionate response. I hope you have the courage to do that.
She is my senator, by the way.
Yeah,
thank you. And I appreciate that perspective.
I think she should share it with you.
Because
it's so personal to her.
Labels get put on, and it's just a short way of saying you shouldn't have to pay to vote.
I understand what a poll tax is. I'm not sure you do. Madam Chair, the other issue is there's a proposed amendment to this bill. This is for our veteran. Which would pay for any armed forces member who is currently serving or who has been discharged, any veteran who meets the definition of veteran by Oregon statute, and any person with disability. So, Madam Chair, there are questions about barriers, and there's questions about veterans and their service and honoring their service that I think would be answered by the Dash 1 amendment. So I urge that to your consideration. I'm always, Madam Chairman, interested in references to King County, where quite frequently more ballots are turned in than voters are registered. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Boquist.
Thank you. I just want to make sure we correct several things on the record here. I mean, there is no poll tax here, and the notion wouldn't even make 35 seconds in a court of law in the state of Oregon because you can hand carry your ballot in. That being said, I think as several of the proponents here know, I'm quite supportive, correcting the record again, Madam Chair, quite supportive of the issue of disabled individuals who don't have access, electronic, veterans, military personnel, so on and so forth. But I do want to correct something. I mean, just because some admiral or general somewhere in the United States military claimed that the combat soldiers and the men and women serving overseas could mail their ballot free of charge, the reality of the ground is it's just utterly false. If they're sitting in some fancy firebase somewhere in which, you know, they have three hots and a cot a day and things are great, that happens. But the reality is the reason we don't have those returned back is, I can give an example. I've watched a bag of ballot, you know, or mail being delivered with ballots dropped off of the airplane on the landing strip. And, of course, it came out. There wasn't even a postal clerk, and nobody could return the mail any direction. And because, they didn't have a stamp. Because the one deal is the one guy, Snuffy at the bottom, who was doing his job, who was second duty to be the mail clerk, there's no stamp, and so, you know, he'd throw those to one side. They just don't get the message. So I'm very, very supportive of figuring out a way to get veterans, military, and disabled to do it. I do have a bone of contention, not with this panel, but with some of the things that were said. We don't have a poll tax. You can go to the any one of the drop boxes we told them to create, so on and so forth. But I just wanted the record corrected.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. Charlie Fisher and Kate Newhall, I'm going to ask you to keep your comments brief because we have another bill we have to get to today.
Thank you, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kate Newhall with Family Forward Oregon. And thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today in support of Senate Bill 683, which would require prepaid postage on all Oregon ballots. And I will be quick. Family Forward supports this concept as we think that all Oregonians should have free and unencumbered access to voting. Senate Bill 683 would remove one barrier that some families, in particular working mothers, face in participating in voting, which is to pay for the postage on all ballots using a business reply mail. I think that in addition to some of the populations that you've heard about, I think working families and families with young children who don't generally carry a ready supply of stamps in their house because now we can do all of our bills and mortgages and rent, pay those online. I think sometimes getting to the store to buy a stamp, to put it on the ballot, to return it is a difficult step. And I guess in my mind, if even one family or working parent is unable to vote because they had so many things they were juggling and waited until the last minute and couldn't get to a stamp or get to a drop box, I think that's reason enough to pass this bill and make sure that it's just very easy for everybody to have their voice heard in our democratic process. I think requiring postage paid on Oregon ballots would ensure that no Oregonian has to have this fear. Thank you.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Charlie Fisher. I'm the state director of Oregon State Public Interest Research Group, or OSPIRG. We're a citizen-based organization that represents thousands of everyday Oregonians around the state. And I'm here to testify briefly in support of Senate Bill 683. We think that voting is one of the most important and fundamental rights of democracy, and anything that could be done to expand people's access and broaden participation and lower barriers for people to exercise that right is one that should be applauded. Just briefly, one reason we think this is important is it acknowledges the direction that we're going in society where postage or mail is a decreasingly used form of communication other than, as was previously mentioned, for solicitations and other things. And so this, by reducing the need for someone to get a stamp, which maybe it's the only thing they'll use a stamp for every 4 years, just makes it easier for them to vote, and we think that's a good thing. So on behalf of our members and OSPIRG supports SB 683.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Farrell?
It's not a question, Madam Chair. It's just there seems to be some confusion about the definition of free. It seems to equate to taxpayer paid, and that isn't free. So, you know, we're not only paying for the election costs, printing of the ballots, distribution, counting, et cetera, and we have about a $2 billion delta that we haven't filled. You know, we do have revenue, about $1.4 billion in new revenue. There's a delta of $2 billion. Please don't characterize taxpayer services as free services. They certainly are not free. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
You.
Okay, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 683 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 802.
Madam Chair and members, Senate Bill 802 permits a person who is 16 years of age to register to vote. There are no amendments associated with this measure, and the fiscal paperwork indicates there is a minimal impact. As well, the revenue paperwork indicates there is no impact.
Okay. We have two of our colleagues here who would like to open the conversation. Welcome. Welcome.
Okay. Chair Burdick.
Vice Chair Ferrioli. I'm Kathleen Taylor, Senate District 21. I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 802, a bill that will lower our voter pre-registration age from 17 to 16 years of age. The fiscal impact of this legislation is minimal, and it does not change the legal voting age, which, of course, is 18. I'm thrilled to work with the Bus Project and my colleagues in this legislation, and I am hopeful that we can follow in the footsteps of the District of Columbia and the 10 states that already allow pre-registration for 16-year-olds. From an efficiency standpoint, pre-registering youth at this age makes sense. We know it is a common time for youth to visit the DMV in hopes of obtaining a driver's license. And in Oregon, we know this would mean an opportunity to pre-register the nearly 20,000 16-year-olds who get their license each year. Young people are more likely than their counterparts who are 30 and older to miss voter registration deadlines, which makes sense as they are newer to the election systems and process. Senate Bill 802 will address this barrier as they will not need to take additional steps upon turning 18 to be eligible to vote in the upcoming election, which will hopefully begin a habit of consistent civic engagement and participation in our democracy. Currently, while many youth register at voter registration drives at schools or community events, these tend to target densely populated areas, leaving out potential voters in more rural locations. As 16-year-olds in all counties visit their local DMV to obtain a driver's permit or license, Senate Bill 802 will impact young voter registration numbers in all parts of the state. Senate Bill 802 is a small step towards increasing voter access and participation, which are needed in the democratic process. It will increase youth voter engagement and strong voter participation in the years to come. I urge your support of Senate Bill 802. I appreciate the opportunity to speak today. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward from Senate District 17, and I too come to urge your support for Senate Bill 802. As Senator Taylor mentioned, we know that many states nationwide are already doing this, allowing 16-year-olds to pre-register. There is really no good reason not to. They want to be engaged. They will be engaged. And once they get their licenses at 16, they don't need to renew for 8 years, just like anybody else. So they may not have any reason to interact with DMV and therefore won't go through our automatic voter registration process the way other people who interact with DMV. So they might not go through it again until 24. There's no reason at 17. And our process does not allow for people who are 17 to automatically have their information uploaded to the Secretary of State for voter registration. It's a really straightforward, nonpartisan issue. This is, as Senator Taylor said, important in both rural and urban areas. 10 years ago, when we passed pre-registration at 17, it was by a nearly unanimous vote, including many of you who were already in the legislature at that time. The vast majority of legislators voted to allow pre-registration at 17. It will allow those who, when people are contacted for information prior to elections, when people reach out to motivate voters, to mobilize them, to inform them, they only look at registered voters. And because Oregon does not allow same-day registration or even registration in the last 3 weeks before the election, many of these younger people are not necessarily registered or not aware of that deadline. We obviously want to increase civic awareness. We try to educate people about these deadlines, but it can be hard to do. And it seems reasonable, especially since we've established the privacy protections when we implemented Motor Voter. We know that we're protecting the privacy of these young people until it's time for them to be ready to vote in their first election, and we want to be able to engage them. And we think that it's time to just expand this, let our 16-year-olds be registered, let them be engaged, let them have that sense of pride of being registered to vote and ready to go as soon as they turn 18. And I, too, would urge your support.
Thank you. Questions?
Madam Chair, just for the record, and either of our esteemed colleagues can answer, what prevents the 16-year-olds' data from becoming public data that would be used to recruit, proselytize, harass, track, stalk, or otherwise make an unwelcome presence visible and available in a 16-year-old's life?
Thank you.
You're talking about a campaign.
I'm talking about a campaign, Madam Chair.
Talk about us.
And by the way, Madam Chair, I don't ask questions I don't know the answer to.
Thank you very much. Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Ferrioli, I appreciate the question very much. I have in front of me a letter from Legislative Council addressing this very issue. ORS 247.016 states, if a person who registers to vote will be under the age of 18 on the date of the next election held on a date listed in ORS 171.185 or the next special election, the person's voter registration information, including but not limited to the person's name and any identifying information, may not be disclosed as a public record under the range of public record statutes. So it is prohibited by statute, Senator, for that information to be released if the person will not be eligible to vote in the next election.
I mean, just like it says in line 12 of the bill.
Just like it says in line 12 of the bill. We're just trying to make sure that we've got it all of our bases, but I also wanted to give you the current statute, sir.
Yeah, I appreciate the luminous references. You know, my concern for 16-year-olds is that they would just be made targets in, you know, what's become not a pleasant process of elections. I'm persuaded by the testimony of the witness, plus the ORS, that at least they wouldn't be disclosed under the public records rules. Hacking is a different matter. Loss of records is compromises that may not be official. Different matter. Madam Chair, another question, and I do not know the answer to this.
Quickly, please.
Why not at birth? I mean, we register folks for Social Security cards at birth. Why don't we just put them on the voter rolls at birth?
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, I would argue pretty strongly that people should be making those decisions for themselves, and we should be engaging at that time, should be allowed to, when they're 16 and they enroll through DMV, they're choosing to interact with the Department of Motor Vehicles, and that's one of the predicating facts of our motor voter things. People choose to interact with DMV to have the privilege of driving, and we're just allowing them to have the right to vote. In this way. They would also obviously be allowed to register and through the traditional methods if they're not choosing to get a driver's license. We have 45,000 births in Oregon on an annual basis. Only 20,000 16-year-olds get driver's license. Some of them delay until they're older. Some of them choose not to get one at all or just get a state ID card so that we may not see it. We also don't know at birth how many of them will actually stay in state until they're old enough. But by the time they're 16, the chances of them being Oregon residents when they're 18 are much higher. So it reduces administrative inefficiency.
Madam Chair, I never noticed that being a resident of the state or not was an impediment to voting here since our vote by mail. But it's just my personal.
All right.
Thank you,
enough of that. All right.
You have to be a legal resident, Senator.
Other questions? Thank you very much.
You feel a lot of veterans.
Okay, now we will take the front row here. Claire Devine, Michaela Kapaj, and Harrison Schreiber. And Nikki, you can either wait or pull up a chair.
Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Ferrioli, members of the committee. My name is Michaela Kapaj, and I am a 17-year-old high school student from Portland, Oregon. I am here today to share my opinion and thoughts on Senate Bill 802, and I am able to be here through the support and outreach of the Bus Project, an organization that promotes civil engagement of everyone in our state. I have been lucky to engage with politics at my age, and I owe a lot of that to my parents, who value and support it. They fostered in me a desire to participate. I am very excited to vote when I turn 18, and I registered to vote 2 weeks after my 17th birthday. Not every teenager in Oregon is growing up with the same education and engagement around politics that I have. But despite these differences, every Oregonian should have the same access to the ballot when it comes time to vote. Lack of registration is one barrier, and that's why I support Senate Bill 802. This bill would make registration easier for young voters in the state. A law passed in 2007 allows 17-year-olds to pre-register a full year before they would be able to vote. While the passage of the bill was a step in the right direction, Oregon can do more. lowering the age to 16 years old, in conjunction with the ability to register through the DMV, would make it easier for teenagers to register, since so many of us head to the DMV around that age. The systems for pre-registration are in place. Lowering the age one more year would provide a huge benefit to Oregon's youth population while causing little strain on state systems. There are lots of eligible voters in the state that do not show up on Election Day because they are unregistered. Whether the reason is lack of information, communication, or understanding around how to register, the results are the same. The voices of youth in the state are relatively unsampled and unheard. Individuals ages 18 to 24 have unique viewpoints and opinions. Hearing their voices at the polls would be beneficial to our state as a whole. Furthermore, studies conducted in other states that have pre-registration for 16-year-olds find that not only do those individuals come back and vote once they turn 18, but they stay engaged in politics and keep voting. I believe that engaging in the world and in politics is the best way to learn, to influence, and to affect change. Participation in government from all Oregonians is beneficial to all Oregonians. I support Senate Bill 802 because this bill helps make that possible. I am excited to enter the adult world when I leave high school and turn 18. I am excited to vote and engage in government. Although everybody my age may not have the same poignant interest, everybody deserves to have their voices heard when it's time to vote. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Where do you go to school?
I go to Grant High School.
Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Who's next?
Check.
No, sure.
Okay, thank you. Hello, and thank you to the chair and co-chair, Senator Burdick and Senator Farioli, and to the other members of the Senate Rules Committee. My name is Claire Devine, and I am a junior at Jesuit High School in Portland. I stand before you today because of the Bus Project, a grassroots-based organization aiming to increase youth involvement in the democratic process. In the few years I have been involved with them, I have already been impacted by the legislation they have worked to get passed, and it is because of the Bus Project that I was able to pre-register to vote the day after I turned 17. Now I hope to be a part of the movement to expand voter access even further. According to a study conducted by the Pew Research Center of Voting Statistics among 35 developed countries and members of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the United States ranks 31st out of 35 in terms of voter turnout relative to eligible voters. The study, conducted in 2012 when we had a national voter turnout percentage of 84.3%, of registered voters and only 53.6% of eligible voters pales in comparison to the statistics for the 2016 election, with only 55% of registered voters participating and no data on eligible voters. Similarly, only 65% of our citizens of voting age are registered compared to 91% in Canada and the UK, 96% in Sweden, and nearly 99% in Japan. However, by working at the state level to improve voter access and education, we can reverse these shocking trends. In Oregon, during the 2016 election, our state hit record high voter turnout numbers, around 2 million. After the passing of the Motor Voter Bill in December 2015 and the passing of a bill allowing 17-year-olds to allow to pre-register. Because of this, I was able to hold a voter registration drive at my high school and re-registered over 40 kids in the junior and senior classes. In doing so, I was able to engage in some very constructive, stimulating conversations with my peers about the election and our country's political processes. In the same way, not only are bills such as these proven to increase voter turnout and democratic involvement, but they also prompt civic engagement and interest among youth. While the bill allowing 17-year-olds to pre-register was a vastly important bill in the history of Oregon's voter access record, allowing 16-year-olds to pre-register is the next logical step in this progression. Because many 16-year-olds are already going to the DMV to get their license, allowing the pre-registration process to take place at this time not only increases access for youth who could not otherwise have the time or resources to make this step in the next year, but teens could be notified of their pre-registration status at the DMV, thus clearing up some of the questions surrounding the motor voter registration, where many people were not aware whether or not they were registered. In addition, pre-registration for 16-year-olds would prompt an increase in civic education and discussions in high schools in Oregon, making for more informed voters. This is supported by the fact that 16 is the compulsory school attendance age limit in all cases in Oregon. Even more so, the pre-registration at this age is an effective way to register non-college-bound students whose registration rates are 18% lower than their college-bound counterparts. This is especially important in Oregon, which has one of the lowest high school graduation rates in the country. By further involving youth in the voting process, thus increasing voter access and education, Oregon can continue to lead the nation on the path forward. Because pre-registration for 16-year-olds has already been implemented at little to no cost in other states and reaping enormous benefits, I strongly encourage my senators to consider passing Senate Bill 802. Thank you, everyone, for your time and for taking my words into consideration during your decision-making.
Thank you. Welcome.
So, Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Farioli, and members of the committee. My name is Harrison Schreiber, and I'm a junior at Crescent Valley High School in Corvallis, Oregon. I am here as a member of the Oregon Bus Project, an organization focused on voter education and engagement through for young people. My 17th birthday was a few months ago, and I have to say I was extremely excited to finally be able to pre-register to vote. I have been interested in politics since I was very young and have always tried to find outlets for my interest. Most of my friends thought I was kind of odd because of this passion, especially when I would try to, you know, rope them into what I was doing. It made me sad that I could not convey how important voting was to my friends. The summer after my freshman year, I first got involved with the Bus Project in hopes of empowering myself and finding opportunities to empower my peers. I've since done a number of voter registration drives at my high school with the Bus Project support. I love seeing the impact I was able to make on people at my school and showing them that you're never too young to be thinking about your community and how to make an impact. I was saddened, however, when I had to turn away my peers who were interested in registering but not yet 17. I want everyone to believe in democracy and in their ability to make change. Pre-registering people at a younger age gives teenagers an opportunity to think critically about democracy and the voting process before their 18th birthday. This is why I'm so passionate about passing a bill allowing pre-registration for 16-year-olds. I know you may be concerned about the logistics for such a change in voter policy, but numerous states such as Hawaii, Colorado, and Florida have already adopted similar policies with relative ease and little or no additional expense to the budget. People aged 18 to 24 are less likely to register, let alone vote. In 2008, there are a record number of young people in this demographic voting. However, they still have the lowest voter turnout of any age demographic, with less than half eligible voters actually voting. This is concerning because this means that the group of people are being underrepresented. Their needs may not be met, their concerns might not be taken seriously. It is important to boost voter involvement in this age group because they have a unique perspective and valuable insights. Florida has already enacted pre-registration for 16-year-olds and reported a 4% increase voter increase turnout in the last election. I believe this bill will help show young people, like my friends, that you are not too young to pay attention to what is going on in the world or to make a difference. Giving 16-year-olds the ability to pre-register allows an even younger subset of the population to begin thinking about what ideals and issues matter to them. So when they are finally old enough to vote, they will be ready, informed, and enthusiastic about having their voices heard. A pre-registration bill for 16-year-olds will boost voter engagement and empowerment and will bring a voice to an age group that has consistently not had a strong one. I urge you to pass the pre-registration bill this session. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? You guys are really good advertisement for youth voting.
Thank you.
I'll just have to say that. Nikki, do you have anything to add?
Yes. My testimony is submitted into OLIS. The only thing that I would add on,
give your name just
sorry. My name is Nikki Fisher, Executive Director of the Oregon Bus Project. Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Farley, my testimony is submitted into OLIS. The only thing that I would add in addition to this is when we broke down the county by county outlook, 61% of the interactions that are currently happening with 16-year-olds going to the DMV are counties outside of the Portland metro area. So when you exclude Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington County, 61% of the interactions that are currently happening at the DMV are outside the Portland metro area. It's often those places where the Bus Project can't go to register voters in the high schools, so often the rural communities are impacted at the highest rates. The only other thing that I would add as well is that the cost-effective nature of this bill, so when we look at Maricopa, Arizona does a lot of analysis on voter access. When they looked at the estimates on doing electronic versus paper ballots, it was 3 cents electronically versus 83 cents. So we know that this is a cost-effective measure. It also makes sure that we modernize and is efficient in making sure that these folks are eligible to vote. The only other thing that we would add is that this bill, again, has been passed in 10 other places. The Secretary of State in Louisiana, who's a Republican, fought really hard to make sure that these new registrants were automatically registered to vote when they turned 16. So we're hopeful that we can reach the same consensus here in Oregon.
Thank you very much. Questions? Senator Roblin.
The only thing I can say is that outstanding presentations by all three people, but there's no 16-year-olds, so they're speaking for people who they aren't representing, and I felt bad about that.
They're recent.
They weren't long ago 16-year-olds.
You were recent 16-year-olds, correct?
Not to mean you were 39 last
That's
week.
Right. Exactly.
Thank you very much.
An outstanding dude.
Okay, next we'll have Thomas Krebs and Robert Beckner.
I would like to thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the group for letting me be here. I've learned a lot today. I represent myself.
Your name, please.
Your name, please. What?
Your name, please, for the record.
I'm Thomas Krebs. I live in Kaiser, Oregon, Marion County, and I'd like to thank you for letting me be here. First of all, I find it very interesting today that most of this has been on voter registration. There seems to be the general consensus that more is better. I know for myself, when I fill out the ballot, I only do about half of it, and then the rest of it I don't fill out because I don't know whether John Doe is better than Bill Smith. And I'm not sure that the voting for things you don't understand or don't know about is better than not voting at all. And I think 17 is an applicable age. And at the worst case, you might be 24 before you vote if you're not interested to vote. And I think if you really care, you'll register to vote. I remember the old days when you had to stand in line to vote. And my first vote in efforts was absentee in Southeast Asia. And it was paid for. And I just don't think that in all cases more is better. We need people that care about our government. They do surveys of our younger people, and some don't even know who the president is. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. We'll see how good this is.
Go ahead, back up from the mic.
I'm sorry?
Please back off from the mic. It's very sensitive.
Okay.
Very sensitive.
I have that issue sometimes. Thank you. First of all, young people,
your
I
name,
just
please.
Retired.
Your
I'm
name,
I'm
please.
Sorry. Excuse me. Bob Beckner. I live just north of Kaiser. My family homesteaded there in the 1880s. I'm a farmer, and I just retired for 40 years as a high school ag teacher, ag science, FFA. And I trained young people like yourselves to be able to debate and speak. That's awesome. I'm a great grandpa, and I have my third oldest grandson is 16 years old at North Salem. I remember I grew up on the farm because my grandpa smoked 2 and 3 packs of Camels a day, couldn't get out to the berry field to run the crew. I was an eighth grader. Eighth grade, what's that, 12? I was in charge of about 30 adults or more in the berry field. I was driving equipment and everything else when I was younger. But I remember when I was about a junior in high school, 17 maybe, my dad was in B-17s in World War II. And I don't know, hope you young kids understand what I'm going to say. I look at my dad with a big smile. Dad, wake up. This is the 60s. And you know what? My dad was wise enough to just look at me in the eye, smile, and walk away. Being a high school and teaching young kids, and I have grandkids of that age, they're not ready. They don't understand, and I appreciate these three people testifying, young people. There has to be somebody to step up to the plate. But at 16, they're not quite ready. And I've trained tractor operators, equipment operators, and everything else. And age sometimes is not the issue. But in this case, it is, as far as age. They're not ready. They're not even thinking that. And so they haven't experienced enough life. My wife has a great saying, you cannot vote until you pay taxes, meaning you've got a job and you're paying taxes. And I'm a firm believer of that aspect because and I know you senators and Madam Chairman, we grow every day. I learn every day. And that's what life is all about. And when you quit growing, you start rotting. And I think 16-year-olds is just too young. And there's different ways of tracking to get people involved. And I was here earlier to hear about the postage stuff. And, hey, we've made it too easy in America sometimes. I'm not a believer in a free lunch. Somebody pays. And I love teenagers. I've coached a lot of national champions, even senators in the state of Oregon. But 16 is not ready. Now, high school area, and within the schools, student government, awesome. But you'd be disappointed, and I was too. The student body is sometimes there. They don't care, the students, because they're teenagers, and we were all there, guys and ladies. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the panel? Senator sure. Beyer.
Thank you, Madam. Just a comment.
Sure.
Gentlemen, we're not talking about allowing 16-year-olds to vote.
I know.
It's only, you still have to be 18.
I know. I understand.
Same age when they can go into the military.
I saw the issue in the newspaper.
Yeah.
And that's where we're here.
Okay.
Can I say one more thing?
One thing quickly, and then we have to move on.
I find it interesting about the postage stamp. I am a procrastinator, so I typically drop mine off at the local place. Don't pay a stamp. Don't pay a poll tax. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, our last two witnesses will be Becky Gladstone and Charlie Fisher.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee. My name is Charlie Fisher. I'm the state director for Rossburg. I'm here to support Senate Bill 802, really just because we see it as a very common sense way to expand and broaden participation in our democracy. Mostly because, as was mentioned before, about 20,000 16-year-olds every year go to the DMV to get a driver's license. And effectively, because they are not pre-registered under motor voter, they are kind of left out of that process, and they wouldn't have their next DMV interaction until they're 24. So we think it's just a very easy way to broaden the base of people who are going to participate in our democracy. And then finally, a lot of evidence shows that voting is very much a habit. So once you do it once, you're very much more likely to do it in the future. And we think that engaging younger people at an earlier age is a good way to get more people involved and to kind of start that habit of voting with more people. So for those reasons, we support Senate Bill 802. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Chair Burdick and members of the committee, thank you for taking our testimony. For the record, my name is Rebecca Gladstone. I'm speaking on behalf of the League of Women Voters of Oregon. I'm the first vice president charged with voter education and service, also advocacy for governance. I think it's pertinent for me to repeat our general statement at this point. The League of Women Voters is a 97-year-old grassroots nonpartisan political organization that encourages informed and active participation in government. We envision informed Oregonians participating in a fully accessible, responsive, and transparent government to achieve the common good. LWVOR legislative action is based on advocacy positions formed through studies and member consensus. The League never supports or opposes political parties or candidates. The League consistently supports improving access to voting. One of our priority positions this session is protecting democracy by promoting more representative election systems. This bill would improve voting access for Oregonians. Our support of this bill focuses on the Oregon motor voter interface. When these teens go to the Department of Motor Vehicles to initiate driving tests, permitting, and licensing, they may not need to return until their new driver's licenses are up for renewal, which could be a lapse of 8 years, almost a decade. As our procedures stand, they may not initiate the Oregon motor voter registration sequence until several election cycles have elapsed. We want to make the system as efficient and thorough as possible. We urge support of this bill. Anecdotally, I would like to emphasize that this bill does not change the voting age. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? All right. Thank you very much. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 802. I wanted to particularly thank our young students for coming down to Salem to participate in the process. You're off to a good start. Okay, committee, that completes our business for today, so we are adjourned. We are adjourned. So we